Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
And it is a Tuesday. Paul, you just made me feel very young by referencing a CPU.
How do you not know what a CPU is?
What is a CPU?
So for those who don't know, we're on remote and we're trying to figure out how we can actually see each other over the course of the show. Modern technology, it evades us. But a CPU is short for a computer. And I call everything that is a computer, like something with a keyboard and a mouse, a computer. But you call it for short a CPU. And you are not the first person that is younger than me that I have said CPU to. And they're like, huh?
I've literally never heard CPU in my life.
How?
I don't know.
What's going on here? I mean, CPU, it's a much easier way to say computer. And I guess you're supposed to say PC or something like that. I don't know. I like to say computer. And short for that is CPU. So now you know Paul is older than Vanessa. Definitively from here and from onwards. So, yeah. Thanks for making me feel old this morning. I appreciate it.
How about the hard drive? How about the hard drive emoji? Also, you and I are trying to get connected over Zoom. And this is where, like, you can tell that I lack technical skills because I just now got it up and running. So,
well, there you go. You're going to bash it, bash the computer, bash the phone with your fists. That's what I would do because sometimes
that is
works.
What you would do. You also dropped your computer like the first day we had a show.
I didn't drop it today, though. And that's all that matters. We make progress every single day in our lives.
We do. You are listening to Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Of course, you can hear us on the ESPN app. And you can see Paul's pretty face on Twitch if you'd like to tell him how cute he is.
Thank you.
And hear his Valley Girl voice. Negotiations, Paul. Yesterday was the first day, and I think I speak for a lot of people on this, that I felt like we may have a deal between the players' union and the owners. They agreed on a couple of things, a 12-team playoff being one of them. And then, the talks went until early morning. And they did, as proof that all deadlines in life are hashtag fake news, the deadline went from being a hard deadline yesterday to all of a sudden being like 5 p.m. today.
I think the only people that actually stick to deadlines are people that work for newspapers. But outside of that, I don't think that many people hold to it. So you're right on that front. I would say as far as the progress that was made, I don't know that it was a lot, and I'm not sure that all of a sudden I'm looking at where the baseball and the Players Association stand right now, and I'm saying, hey, a deal's right around the corner. But Saturday things seemed pretty catastrophic, pretty dire, because the owners were basically like, yep, we ain't gonna do what you guys want. But now there seems to be some urgency taking place. And I don't know if people were watching baseball reporters standing outside the place where the owners and the players are meeting. But it was basically just watching Rob Manfred walking back and forth. He's like, we're making progress. We're making progress. And at this point in time, the deadline has been moved from yesterday at an undetermined time to, for now, 4 o'clock Central Time this afternoon. As far as if they don't get a deal done by that deadline, then maybe some regular season games will be missed. Specifically, opening day will not be played on time.
What was best is like the best thing was the reporters that would be like, they are walking at a brisk pace. It looks like they're determined to get things done. But shout out to the guys like Jesse Rogers and Chandler Rome and Bob Nightingales of the world that are there, that are waiting, that are camping out and reporting everything.
Sounds miserable. I mean, I've never done a stakeout, but this is essentially a stakeout. And when your reporting is essentially confined to determining how briskly these people are walking, you know, sometimes people briskly walk because a deal's about to get done. But for the most part, I think people really briskly walk when they have to go to the bathroom more so than anything, right? So, I mean, we don't know.
That's true.
We don't know anything based off of the pace of walking out there.
You know my my bowel situation, so I'm one of those people.
No,
that
I don't. I guess girls don't poop, so that's what I know.
Oh, I definitely. Oh wait, housekeeping is here. Yes, you can come in. Thank you. Yes, you can come in.
So I can see where Vanessa is right now. Vanessa is in a hotel room. There is a curtain behind her, and there's a real conversation here with the housekeeper.
Sorry.
I'm assuming that you just left an absolute mess, as girls are prone to do, even though they don't poop, as we were talking about just a moment
ago. Girls do poop. Girls like me have irritable bowel disease. So,
oh, dang. Okay. Well, we're raising awareness today. How about that?
We are hashtag raising awareness, hashtag for the cure. On Vanessa Ann Gallant, MLB.com is reporting that there was, quote, some progress made and that there was, quote, optimism that the two sides could be nearing an agreement that would allow opening day to begin on time, preventing regular season games from being lost. So where we're at right now, Paul, is that we're still at a point where we don't have to lose games. As I've said before, I do think players will start to give if they realize that it's going to impact their paycheck. Owners are not nearly as worried about anything regarding money because they're billionaires.
This is true. There were some things that were agreed upon yesterday, which means that maybe that hard line stance that the owners are taking isn't going to stay as hard as it has been. It started where they agreed on a 6-pick draft lottery. Not really that much progress as far as trying to minimize tanking, because the 6 worst teams in baseball are generally so much worse than everybody else. But this, I suppose, makes it so that you're not going to get the first overall pick. I also, though, want everyone to remember that first overall pick in baseball, I think it's much more of a crapshoot than it is in football or in basketball.
In any other sport, right. Absolutely.
You really don't know what you're going to get. I mean, just ask the Astros the range of what you can get with the first overall pick between Mark Appel and, you know, Carlos Correa. You know, don't forget about Brady Aiken along the way either. So the other thing that has been agreed upon, and I got to give the Cron a lot of credit, because the baseball writers who are describing this stuff, they're doing a really bad job, I think, of explaining it for idiots like myself in very simple ways.
You want like layman's terms.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
And the Cron has actually done a pretty good job in the write-ups that they've been doing about this. And so there's going to be a bonus pool for pre-arbitration players who perform well. So the league wants to only give $20 million, and the union wants $115 million. So that's a pretty big gap, but at the very least, they're talking about that. And the other thing, this is the most interesting thing, Vanessa, and I'm curious as to how people feel about it. And if you want to weigh in, we have our text line, of course, or at Gallant Says on Twitter, at Sports Vanessa on Twitter, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. 12-team playoff. Looks like it's going to happen, Vanessa. What do you think about that? Because I look at it and I think to myself, baseball has always been big about the importance of the regular season. And they are continuing to take away from the meaning of every single one of its 162 games by adding more and more teams into the playoffs. I like that it was an exclusive club not too long ago. It used to be just 8 teams making it. Then it was 10 with the fake wild card game. Now it's potentially 6. What do you think about this?
I think it's interesting. I think that with baseball, the storyline with baseball has continued to be that they need to not oversaturate even more. They already have 162 games. They already have what most people would consider an ample amount of teams making the playoffs. Like, this is driven by money. Let's just call a spade a spade. More playoff games, more money, more TV revenue for everybody involved. So we'll just call a spade there. But I think that baseball is the sport that has been cautioned as America's game, not to let things become undervalued even more. So look, in the grand scheme of things, it's one of those things where it's like at least they agreed on something.
Right.
It's like a couple that, you know, is trying to reconcile, or maybe a couple that's getting divorced, like that opening scene in Wedding Crashers where they're negotiating and then he's like, all right, you can have the miles, babe. And she's like, no, you have the miles. At least they're negotiating and at least they're getting somewhere.
Right.
Even if it's for something that we might not agree with the exact number, at least they're getting somewhere.
I'm going to circle back to the 12-team playoff, and this is sort of my line of thinking here, Vanessa. On one hand, playoff baseball is awesome, and more playoff baseball is good. But on the other, I feel like there's way too many games over the course of a season. I think 162 is too many. I don't know what the appropriate number is, especially when you're trying to stay current or keep history alive with the records that have been set over the course of a season. Obviously, the home run record is maybe looked at with a side eye, and maybe we don't look at statistics the same way we did 25 years ago or so because of the steroid era. But there is that weird balance of regular season versus playoffs. Anything can happen in baseball's playoffs too. So the idea that a team can come out of nowhere as that sixth team into the playoffs, I mean, that's not unheard of at all. So it definitely makes it more possible for a team that doesn't spend a ton of money to potentially sneak its way in there and find itself in a World Series or challenging for a World Series. So that's good. And more playoff baseball is good. I guess I'm just wondering why we have to wait through 162 games to get to that point if now we're going from, you know, a fourth of the league to closer and closer to half of the league making the playoffs.
It's absolutely too many games, and I think a lot of players would say the same thing. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, some really interesting comments from Deshaun Watson's personal quarterback trainer. This is interesting. You're going to want to hear this. We break it down and give you our thoughts, stats, and opinions. That will be coming up next. All right, it's that time again, guys. 97.5 and 92.5's fourth annual Bracket Madness presented by Bud Light and supported by Rambler Sparkling Water. We're going to be giving prizes to you guys, the 97.5 winners. Yes, the 0.5 winner is the penultimate winner, second to last in the whole bracket. And did we mention that this is all free? Prizes include a $50 gift card to the Burger Joint, Chewy's Fine Tex-Mex, I love that place, Smash Burger, and much more. Head to ESPN975.com to register now. It's Bracket Madness presented by Bud Light, America's favorite light lager. We'll be back.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, and we are rolling along on a Tuesday. I am Vanessa Richardson. He is Paul Gallant. I'm at Sports Vanessa, and he is at Gallant Says ESPN 97.5, 92.5. You can hear us on the ESPN app, or you can stream us on Twitch. All right. Deshaun Watson has surrounded himself with certain people since he started his journey as a quarterback. And it's not uncommon for quarterbacks in the NFL to have trainers other than the ones that are on their team. Usually these are the guys that meet with them in the offseason. Obviously, Deshaun trusts this guy whose name is Quincy Avery. And he trains a lot of quarterbacks, especially a lot of up and coming quarterbacks. He was on Ryan Russillo's podcast, the podcast that would have been released, I guess it would have been Sunday. Ryan Russillo does a really, really good job with this podcast.
I love it. It's my favorite.
Yeah, he's great. He's very down to earth. And Quincy Avery had some interesting things to say about Deshaun Watson. So to preface this, Ryan Russillo had asked him if he thought Deshaun Watson would play again. And also on this podcast was Jesse Palmer, who of course trains quarterbacks as well. So here was the answer to that question.
You already know what I'm going to ask.
Way more likely to speak his mind than I am.
You think Deshaun plays this year, man?
Yep. We've started working out, and I will say this. Deshaun is throwing the ball better than I think I've ever seen him throw a football. And it's not like I'm just like saying this, but he's super healthy. He's super focused. He's super locked in. When it comes to like putting on his cleats, walking on a field Sunday at 1 o'clock, the first time that he does that, I think that people are going to be reminded very, very quickly that Deshaun Watson is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And they might have forgot like his last year in Houston when he played, he was carrying like three guys who could have been working at your local Walmart at the receiver position. And he went absolutely berserk.
He led the league in yards.
Yeah, he went berserk. If he gets on a team with any sort of talent around him, somebody's going to have to like really watch out because –
I'll one up that. I think he plays this year, and I don't even know what team he goes to. He's a top three MVP candidate this year, 100%. The people forget, this is one of the best players in the league with a chance to be the best. This is a – Deshaun is not a solid quarterback. He's not a guy who's had a good run. This is a gangster. The way he unites a room, the way that he shows up.
Got to cancel him for that. So we're good there. So canceled, Jordan Palmer. Canceled. Anyway.
So that was Jordan Palmer, excuse me, right? Quarterback.
Jesse Palmer's, I think he's back on The Bachelor now, maybe? I'm not 100% sure.
The Palmer brothers, the Rogers brothers, who can keep them straight. But the main thing that we wanted you to hear, of course, was Quincy Avery.
Right.
Deshaun Watson's quarterback trainer in the comments that he made on the Ryan Russillo podcast. So first of all, it was weird that he was like, oh, Deshaun looks better than ever. Like, I would hope so, okay, because he didn't play.
And of course he's going to say that too, because it's essentially his client.
It's his client, right? Like when Deshaun does well, Quincy does very well and gets hella business.
Hella,
that's a young kid's term. His comment on the Walmart wide receivers. This was an interesting comment. It's caused some backlash. I know what he was trying to say. I think we all know what he was trying to say as far as Deshaun elevated people's games. But Deshaun didn't work with like the worst wide receivers in the world. And that year, the year that he's talking about, which is Deshaun Watson's final year, it's not like they were doing super, super well.
They were bad that year. And I'll be honest, I'm not expecting Avery to know every single player on the Texans over the course of that year because Avery is working with other quarterbacks over the course of that season. I'm sure that he watches games from time to time. We'll get to why I think he said what he said. I thought it was interesting afterwards that yesterday he tweeted, people really take things out of context for a story, but y'all have a day. Yep, because it's quarterback talk time, and that's how it works. Sorry, man. You talked about Deshaun Watson, arguably the most controversial figure in the NFL right now that Antonio Brown is out of it. When you look at the receivers he was working with, Vanessa, I think Matt Young of the Chronicle did a pretty good job of laying out the numbers of the receivers that he was working with over the course of that year.
Right.
I mean, that was a loaded wide receiver core, even though DeAndre Hopkins wasn't there. Brandon Cooks, 81 catches, 1150. Will Fuller, 53 catches, 879 yards with the suspension too. Randall Cobb, not the Randall Cobb of old, but 38 catches, 441 yards. Those are three good borderline Pro Bowl receivers at their peak, you know?
Well, I was going to say Randall Cobb, especially when you're talking about vintage Randall Cobb. He wasn't what he was, but he wasn't, like, awful.
No, he wasn't. So why does he describe it like this? Part of me thinks he's not paying that much of attention, and there's a little hyperbole going on. And the reason that the hyperbole is going on is, honestly, I think a valid reason to say that he was throwing to not very good wide receivers, even though that's factually inaccurate. Remember, Vanessa, that Quincy Avery was sitting with Deshaun Watson when Watson found out on his phone that DeAndre Hopkins had been traded to the Arizona Cardinals.
That's right.
In fact, Avery took a picture of Deshaun Watson where his face was like looked like he just found out that he had been robbed or something and said, put out a tweet and then deleted the tweet not too long afterwards. So I think this all comes from Quincy Avery's like, the Texans traded DeAndre Hopkins away. And if you're looking for a source where all the bad feelings that Watson might have had for the organization started, it started there. So, look, I know a lot of people are making a big deal out of what Avery had to say, and I understand why, and he's wrong, as Matt Young laid out with all those stats. But I get why he said it, because if they had not traded away DeAndre Hopkins, that team would not look the way that it looks right now. That's where this all started, that moment in time. And he's being hyperbolistic, absolutely. You traded one of the best receivers, if not the best wide receiver in the game at that point in time, away for peanuts. And Watson probably had a lot of strong things to say about it behind the scenes to Quincy Avery.
I think Quincy's point was, my client was able to do a lot, which, again, they won four games, but he led the league in passing yards. So my client was able to do a lot with way less than what he should have had. And that's true. Deshaun Watson was able to make certain plays work and was able to stretch out games in a way that, once they got rid of DeAndre Hopkins, some people would think that they weren't able to do. Definitely hyperbole. And it's one of those things to where when you say yes to doing a podcast like that, when you're Quincy Avery and your client is Deshaun Watson and he is wrapped up in civil lawsuits and the quarterback carousel talk and just the general talk of wanting out of Houston, when you sit down to do a podcast like that, I don't think people consider sometimes the fact that those snippets are going to be cut, and then you have the Chronicle do an article,
yeah,
and then you have Sports Illustrated do an article, and all of a sudden it is blown up. Was it taken out of context? No, because it is literally exactly what he said.
Yeah.
But to your point, him being hyperbole, yes.
That's what it is. I mean, who hasn't, for the sake of making a point, said something hyperbolistic that's not actually true? I think we all do it from time to time, and I get it here. They traded away DeAndre Hopkins. Whether or not you think that was the right move, they got a second-round pick for the guy. You know, this is arguably top three wide receiver in the game at the point where he was traded. And when healthy, I would still say top three, top two wide receiver in the game. We saw this guy play with bad quarterback after bad quarterback after bad quarterback. So that's where this all, I think, is coming from. And I just keep on thinking about where this relationship soured was there. Would we be talking about where Deshaun Watson goes next if it's just Watson talking and trying to navigate his way through these sexual misconduct allegations? I really can't say. I don't know that the Texans would all of a sudden still feel the need to move on from him. I think it just kind of added up in a way where now it's easier for them to move on from arguably the best player with an extremely checkered off-the-field recent history. In recent history, I mean, this guy is up there with Antonio Brown, you know, and I guess to go a little bit further back, you know, with Ben Roethlisberger, you don't really talk about what happened in Milledgeville, Georgia anymore.
Right.
But something happened there. He got suspended four games for it. I really do wonder where we would be, because the DeAndre Hopkins trade, I really think, was the beginning of the end for Watson here, regardless of the off-the-field stuff.
When I got to Houston in August of 2019, you were looking at a Texans team that was supposed to be very, very good. So J.J. Watt, Whitney Mercilus, DeAndre Hopkins, Deshaun Watson. I mean, there were a lot of pieces of this team that seemed super consistent, and now we know what has happened. And yes, it does seem like it started from the Deshaun Watson or from the DeAndre Hopkins trade for sure. All right. When you look at the NFL Combine, we have Nick Caserio and Lovie Smith that are going to be talking today and tomorrow. What do you expect to hear from them, Paul?
Well, again, one more time, I want clarity on what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
As far as Nick Caserio, Lovie Smith, their relationship. And I guess I also want to hear what they are going to be prioritizing in the draft. They're not going to give us any information on that front, though. You know,
Nick Caserio is so good at saying everything yet saying nothing.
Right. It's one of those things where all of these guys are good at this. There's a point where I wonder about some of these press conferences. Are we ever going to really get a tidbit of any sort that's not given out accidentally during one of these? But really, to me, it's, hey, Lovie Smith just basically said that Nick Caserio is not going to be a part of game day operations last week on the Rich Eisen show. Is that really the case going forward? And, you know, I do think that there was a bit of a hyperbole when it came to the reaction to Caserio potentially being involved with that with David Culley. But there's a part of me that thinks that a coach should be open to all help. And Lovie Smith, at least in that comment, said, yeah, I don't need it. I'm like, okay.
I'm expecting Deshaun Watson questions, Davis Mills questions, yep. maybe a Laremy Tunsil question.
Yep.
I certainly, you know, will be there and have boots on the ground for that. So Nick Caserio talking later at the Combine. All right, we're going to talk more about the Combine coming up. But if you own your home, I need you to listen to me right now. Grab your phone. Our friends at TGS Insurance are about to deliver big savings all without ever talking to an agent. You know you're paying too much for home insurance, but you probably don't shop for better rates because it is a huge hassle. It doesn't have to be a hassle anymore, guys. Thanks to TGS Insurance, they build a new system that instantly shops over 36 carriers and gives you a full quote in just 15 seconds using nothing but a single text message. And you'll probably save a bunch of money. So take your phone right now and text the word money. That's M-O-N-E-Y to 232323. Their system will ask for your address. Send that back and you'll get your full quote with excellent coverage within 15 seconds. This company and the savings are legit. Their online rating's nearly perfect. Their average customer from 2021, guys, saving $870 on their home insurance. No one likes to shop for home insurance, but TGS makes the easiest it's ever been. You're one text message away from massive savings. One more time, text money to 232323 and get your home insurance quote and save big today. All right, coming up next on Vanessa and Gallant, I unexpectedly had a shrimp cocktail with some former Texans last night. We talk about that. We get more into what we hope to hear from the Combine, as well as that odd Art Briles situation. That's coming up next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, Vanessa and Gallant on a Tuesday. I'm in Indy for the NFL Combine, where we will hear from Nick Caserio later today, Lovie Smith tomorrow. He's Paul Gallant. He's holding it down in Houston, as well as our awesome producer, Tyler. A lot going on this week, Paul, especially in the NFL, a lot of talks in the NFL world. We touched on this a little bit in the last segment of just what we hope to hear from Nick Caserio today. But I had an interesting conversation with two former Texans. This was unexpected. So I'm friends with Mike Silver, who he is currently at Bally. He used to work at Sports Illustrated. And we were meeting at Harry and Izzy's, which is like, who hasn't blocked you on Twitter?
He blocked me on Twitter for something we're going to talk about later, you know, talking about Hugh Jackson. But anyway, let's see.
Which is the, Harry and Izzy's, the knockoff St. Elmo's. So it's owned by St. Elmo's. So I met Mike there for shrimp cocktails, and he said that he had a couple of guys with him, and it ended up being Sage Rosenfeld, former Texan quarterback, backup quarterback, and then David Anderson. For, yeah, never forget, hashtag never forget. And then David Anderson, the former Texans wide receiver. So it was fun to meet them, talk to them. Of course, they were part of a much different Texans regime. They played under Gary Kubiak, a.k.a. Kubes, as they call him. Yeah, so it was interesting to catch up with them. Great to talk to them. Two guys that spent a lot of time in Houston under a different regime and talk to them about where they think this team is going and whatnot. So interesting stuff. And of course, if you are ever in Indy, you need to get the shrimp cocktail because my sinuses are now completely clear.
Oh, there you go. Well, why are they cleared? Because the shrimps, what are they doing? What
Wait,
kind of
do
powers
you not
do
know
they have?
Do you not know the shrimp cocktail?
No, I know that if they brag about shrimp cocktail, I'm like, congratulations, but I have no idea where you're getting it from. You Gary, Indiana is not Indianapolis, Indiana. You're not on the water. I don't think shrimp go in lakes. I could be wrong on that. So
they get fresh shrimp.
From?
I mean, I don't know where they get it. I'll ask tonight. I don't know where they get it from, but it's not like they're going to Walmart.
I mean, sure. I feel like you can get jumbo shrimp at Walmart.
The whole thing with the shrimp cocktail is the sauce. It's horseradish sauce.
Oh, okay.
So it's known, so it's known to be very, very, very spicy.
Yeah,
and
horseradish is
hot
good.
So you would actually really like it.
Okay.
Not a big shrimp guy, though.
Texture's weird. I don't know why I don't like it.
Texture, not your thing?
No, it's kind of got this weird, kind of crunchy weirdness to it. I'm just not a fan, but I'm picky, as you'll find out.
As we continue with NFL Combine, probably the main thing this week that we're watching, as well as, of course, all things MLB negotiations, we touched on it a little bit in the last segment. So we expect a big national media presence today for Nick Caserio's press conference, which is at 2:30 Indianapolis time, but 1:30 Houston time. I'll be live tweeting it. I'll be there. We expect a big national presence here, the obvious storyline being Deshaun Watson. So I think there's going to be a lot of questions involving Watson. I think we could see here some questions involving Davis Mills. Is there any particular thing that you would like to see Nick Caserio touch on today?
Well, are you going to even consider drafting a quarterback, or are you that married to the idea of Davis Mills is the first thing? And while I don't know that this necessarily tips his hand as far as what he was going to do with that third overall pick, but I am curious as to what he thinks the most important foundational non-quarterback piece for a roster is. This is the first time that he's ever going to be drafting in the top 10. To piggyback off of that, what position that gives your franchise the most value can you find generally in that spot? Are you looking for in that spot? Is it an edge rusher in a draft that supposedly has a lot of great edge rushers? Is it an offensive lineman for a team that does not have a very good offensive line, despite trading multiple first-round picks for Laremy Tunsil? The answers to that one, I am curious about. Obviously, if you ask him for specifics, he is going to tap dance around them. But if you can somehow figure out a way to get him to just talk about what he thinks are the foundational pieces for a team, because he now has the chance to get them, that's what I want to know about from Nick Caserio's perspective. Is there one sort of philosophy that he is married to that could maybe give us an inkling as to what he's going to do in a couple of weeks?
I have a feeling that this regime is very the non-tangibles, the intangibles. So to your point, not just skill players, but what do they bring? Like, the Texans strike me, and it's not just because of Jack Easterby and because of like the religious part of it, but just philosophical, right? I don't think every franchise puts as much stock in the weird interview questions. Case in point, Robert Saleh is not even coming to the NFL Combine. He's literally doing it over Zoom. Same with Sean McVay. But the Texans strike me as a team and a regime that they care about those questions about your philosophy and about your intangibles and whatnot.
What do you think they're going to say? Do you have an inkling? You know, you were talking with Sage Rosenfels, David Anderson. What are they hearing? If they got their ears to the streets, Texans legends that they are.
Yeah, I don't know that they're really like getting that kind of information, but I think the interesting thing about this Texans team is that they have so many needs. The running back position is the one that strikes me as the biggest one, but you could really go through so many of these different positions. Certainly offensive line, especially if they're going to have rookie quarterbacks. They need to have rookie quarterbacks that are protected. So I think the interesting thing is that you could really go through all, I mean, safety for sure, every position and say, they have a need here. They have a need here. They have a need here. So at that point, are they just drafting the best available player?
That's what they should do.
That number three overall pick?
Right. They should do that. Who that ends up being, we'll see. I mean, I would love to see Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan fall, at least based off of having watched him play. I know Lance Erline would know a lot more about whether or not he's going to be able to become, you know, a J.J. Watt caliber of player. I feel like he thinks that he's more of a finished product coming into the league. There is that safety from Kyle Hamilton from Notre Dame, who I'm also intrigued by. But at this point, look, find an actual star. You have none. I mean, Brandon Cooks is the closest thing that you have to one. Laremy Tunsil doesn't want to play here anymore. You need to find someone that I think is going to be a potential All-Pro. And I don't know how much faith I'm supposed to have that they're going to hit it on this pick. I mean, you take a look at the history of this team when they've had the earliest draft pick, David Carr, Jadeveon Clowney,
yeah.
Mario Williams, you know, like it hasn't gone terribly in the case of the latter two. I mean, Mario Williams was he contributed. He wasn't a bust. Jadeveon Clowney contributed. He wasn't a bust. But you did not find that 10-year all-pro kind of player that can be a building block for your team in that spot. Sure, I guess you make up for it to an extent when you draft J.J. Watt outside of the top 10. But organizationally, this team, even if it is a totally different regime, they have not done well in this spot. This has been difficult for them.
To me, this is a chance. I don't want to say Nick Caserio needs redemption because that's extremely dramatic. But he's had two messy coaching searches under his belt. We know that one of them probably had to do with the Brian Flores situation. We know that one of them could have had to do with the influence of them thinking that they just needed David Coley for that year. Regardless, I think we can all agree that Nick Caserio has had two awkward coaching searches under his belt. The draft, you know, he was able to draft that last class. If he can draft well, in your opinion, does this kind of help the narrative that he's been a little bit messy?
I guess, but, you know, you're not going to find the answer to that definitively for a couple of years either.
Right.
You know, we all want to make judgments right away after the NFL draft takes place. I've always found it hilarious that every single website will generally give a team a C grade or higher. So, like, they're not actually really putting their balls on the table to, you know, actually make, like, a tough decision. They're like, all right, everyone did satisfactory. BS, that's crap. Like, one team gets an F out of all of them. That's how it typically works. No, more teams should be getting Fs. Have some, you know, chutzpah NFL graders of drafts. But Caserio did pretty well, though, for year one.
He did.
I mean, I think that deserves merit, considering he did not have a first-round draft pick. Like, what are you supposed to do when you find yourself in that spot? But that doesn't, you know, that's 1 year. I think, Vanessa, you know more than anybody. Ryan Gregson wins Executive of the Year with the Indianapolis Colts, his first year on the job. And that was a good draft class. I mean, they found T.Y. Hilton. They had Andrew Luck. Dwayne Allen was a competent player. Kobe Fleener, nah. But, you know, they brought in a bunch of pieces in the first year. It looked really good. But then after that, it was a complete disaster. This is tricky. This is the first time Caserio's drafting in this spot, too. You know, they've never in New England ever drafted this high. Not even close. Like, Richard Seymour was the sixth overall pick in 2001, but Caserio was not high enough up the leaderboard, I'm guessing, to have any input on that decision. He ended up being a Hall of Famer. The next one they had was Gerard Mayo. But after that, I mean, they're picking in the 20s every single year, or they're trading out of the first round. There's a lot more pressure on you when you're in this spot. And you're likely not going to be able to get that much trading back, because who's the quarterback that everyone's excited about this year? It, at least in theory, does not exist on March 1st of 2022, that quarterback that's going to get you the big-time draft haul.
We'll see what Nick Caserio does and what decision he makes. Certainly a lot of interesting options and not a lot of great ones at the quarterback position, so the experts say. All right, coming up, that didn't last long. Somebody fired after 4 days on the job or stepping away. Plus, Kyrie might not play after all. That's coming up.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, happy Tuesday, Vanessa and Gallant. He is at Gallant Says on Twitter. I am at Sports Vanessa on social media. Reach out to us, or of course, you can hit us up on our text line. All right, it's been a weird week. So we expected Kyrie Irving to be able to play. Obviously, he's been very open about being unvaccinated, and that has been a problem for him playing since he lives in New York. So with New York dropping the mask policy, it was widely reported by Shams Charania and Woj that he would be able to play. Kyrie Irving would be able to suit up again. However, a spokesperson for New York's Mayor Adams clarified that Irving may not be able to play due to the private sector mandate, which bars unvaccinated workers from city workplaces. And Irving, of course, would fall into that particular category. So the long and the short of it, Paul, is that no vaccine, no Kyrie Irving for home games, which is drastically different than what we thought earlier this week.
I don't want to dive into the politics side of it, but it's hard not to. I mean, at this point, we're in different parts of the country. I was in an area that was just so crazy. I felt like, in terms of going overboard to keep everyone safe, it's disappointing for Brooklyn, that's for damn sure. I mean, Ben Simmons, he's working himself back into shape, and Kyrie Irving, you thought he was going to be back on the court. But I think in a situation like this, whenever a politician has an example to make, has an opportunity to make an example out of a public figure, they will do it. They love to remind people that no one is special whenever they can. So they did it somewhat passive aggressively saying, like, well, I would love to see Kyrie out there, but, you know, my hands are tied. The rules are the rules. And he would look pretty bad if all of a sudden he is, you know, bending over backwards to help the team in New York that no one gives a crap about. Now, if it were the Knicks, I think people would perhaps, you know, give him some brownie points, you know? The Knicks trying to, if the Knicks were in the same spot as the Nets right now and they're trying to rally, yeah, he would pander maybe. But in this situation, no, he's not going to do that. And I'm bummed out. I really want to see Kyrie Irving go up against James Harden because I don't think Harden's about that. I think if it's actual, hey, we're doing this we're out for blood kind of thing, and I think Irving has a little bit of motivation on this front. I think that Irving is going to cross him over and break Harden's legs the way that supposedly, per some, that he was doing in practice from time to time, which led to more acrimony between the two.
Steve Nash has definitely kept it PC. He has not said much when he was asked about this. He said, quote, I just wait to see how it all plays out. It's not my domain to get involved in the policies and mandates. So I'll just wait patiently and hopefully we'll get good news at some point. Steve Nash is somebody.
Life.
Yes. And that's what I was going to say. Steve Nash is somebody that was so well liked and respected among a lot of the players that I know. He gets this shot to coach a team, head coach of a team, and he's dealing with everything that he's been dealing with. And he has no clear answer on whether he's going to have his best player or not.
He's one of the best players in recent NBA history. And it's pretty funny that it's just been such a catastrophe for him with this team. I mean, you sign up. It's one of those things where the job requirement, the job description is essentially roll the ball out. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden. I mean, that's it. That's all you had to do. And when those guys were all on the court at the same time, that was a terrifyingly good team. But I think it only happened for 18 games. And if you're Steve Nash, you're like, okay, so wait, Kyrie's not here because he is deciding to take a stand for the sake of taking stands, not because he believes in anything. You have James Harden getting tired of the fact that Kyrie Irving isn't there. Understandably so, in that situation. It's just he's, you know, quitting on a team less than 2 years after quitting on another team. And, I mean, I don't even know what you do if you're Kevin Durant in that situation. It seemed like it was going to be a very easy job. I don't know what you really do if you're an NBA head coach these days. You have so little control. These guys can get you canned whenever. And now they don't even have to show up for work half the time, whether it's Ben Simmons, now who he's dealing with, or it's Kyrie Irving. Oh, God, it's just a lot. Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons are both on your basketball team, and you have to deal with that at the same time. That's too much.
In the age of player empowerment for any sport, it's going to be different to be a coach or a manager. You can play it like AJ Hinch did, where you're kind of friends with everybody and you're kind of a player's coach. You can try to have a different approach than that, but you've talked about this a lot. Player empowerment has changed things.
It's bad.
With the NBA, you see it on a much different level. And I think that the thought process when you hire somebody like Steve Nash, he's these guys essentially at one point was their coworkers, their contemporaries. He was on the same level as them. But you do have to imagine that he thought that he was getting into a really healthy and almost easy situation, and then this happens.
Right. And look, you want your first job as a coach to be an easy one. You don't want it to be too difficult. Especially if you're going to be learning on the job, I think it's difficult for guys who are elite players to all of a sudden see every single player on the court and say, like, wait, why don't you see things the way that I do? I don't think Kobe Bryant ever would have been a good coach. I think there's a lot of great players. Michael Jordan probably wouldn't have either. There are exceptions to the rule. Bill Russell was pretty good when he was a coach with the Boston Celtics, but that was a million years ago, too. So, yeah, and to go back to player empowerment, look, I'm all for fighting for you and being selfish. This is the United States of America. You should have the right to be selfish. It's great, right? You don't have to think about the collective good, but it's bad for the sport. You know, all of this player empowerment stuff, if you're just a fan of a team and you want to watch these guys every single week, it's hard to feel like you can consistently have a watchable product if a guy that you signed to a long-term contract can just be like, nah. I mean, that sucks if you're a fan. And again, go and be selfish, But selfishly, me, the fan, is sitting back and is like, screw you. I don't identify with you. I don't have any empathy for you. You think it's so bad playing this game for a living that you can just sit out of work and force your way out of town? Well, I'm paying hundreds of dollars to go to these games a couple of times a year. This is bogus. So it's another example of it. And in this situation with Irving, you know, I suppose you could say, oh, he's taking a stand. But the guy loves to take stands for the sake of taking stands. So, yeah.
It will be interesting to see how it all plays out. Speaking of taking a stand, a lot of people took a stand when Art Briles was hired as the offensive coordinator at Grambling State. I was irritated. I know a lot of people, regardless of where you stand on issues, this was just a hire that seemed unnecessary. Doug Williams spoke out about it, etc. After 4 days on the job, he is out as Grambling State's offensive coordinator. Your thoughts?
I mean, good. And that's right. It for his coaching career. I mean, he's been out of the game since 2016. What was going on at Baylor, considering what Baylor is supposedly all about? I mean, hypocrisy. Who isn't a hypocrite? But so much of that going on. The football program was good, and they did not want the football program to stop being good. So they decided to look to the side and look to the side. This does happen at a lot of programs. I know that I have heard rumors myself, not the Bernie Fine one, because that was out in the open. You know, the assistant coach of Jim Boeheim, who had this really weird relationship with a minor. But, I mean, there were other things that I heard about Syracuse's basketball team, about some of the players on it. And I don't know if I can corroborate them, but I was always like, whoa, that happened while I was at school? I know for a fact that, you know, Eric Dievendorf, who is thought of as this, like, hey, wow, he's a great Syracuse alumni. I mean, he like, uppercut somebody that was roommates with my then significant other in college. You know, like, this stuff happens all over the place. I'm not trying to make a point in singling out Baylor here, but that this guy got another opportunity and that he was actually stopped from getting that opportunity. There are certain things that you don't deserve second chances for. Turning a blind eye to something like this? How? How do you do that? How do you remove yourself from the humanity so far that you don't take issue with it? Are you that scared of the repercussions that are going to come down on you for being the overseer? I mean, shoot, Kendall Briles, I think he knew about some of this stuff too, you know? But we feel the need to say, oh, everyone deserves a second chance. Do we really need to give everyone a second chance for everything?
Not when it's this bad. Not when it's this bad. And this is the difference, Paul, between cancel culture and accountability. This is accountability. This is him doing something really dumb, ignoring a lot of different things, and shame on Hugh Jackson for making the hire in the first place. It was absolutely moronic.
What a moron Hugh Jackson is, by the way, too. Like, this is something that I thought for a while. I remember getting in a fight over on the AM side of things with the general over Hugh Jackson, because like Baker Mayfield was taking shots at Hugh Jackson, and I said, yeah, Hugh Jackson's an idiot. I mean, he's one of the worst coaches in NFL history. I don't understand why he has as many friends in the media as he does. He's terrible at his job, has never been good. I guess he's nice, great, wonderful, swell. How they hired him at Grambling is embarrassing, honestly, that I think about it. Art Briles would have actually made sense, because at least Art Briles was good. Of course, he would have gotten the job taken away from him right after the fact. But this situation, Hugh Jackson puts out this statement where he says, please, and he spells please wrong, like, please think about
P-L-E-A-S.
Hashtag empathy, hashtag second chance, hashtag, you know, reconciliation or something like that. And you know, I was listening to John and Lance talk about it this morning. What's hilarious is there was this reporter for ESPN who did a little digging into Hugh Jackson's foundation, who put out this letter about, hey, man, you need to give Art Briles a second chance. And it looks like Hugh Jackson might be, I don't know, wetting his beak with a little bit of the Hugh Jackson Foundation. And when that tweet was put out there, Jackson's Twitter account for the foundation actually responded. And while they responded, they basically may have implicated Hugh Jackson in perhaps, I don't know, using his money as a means to dodge the IRS. I don't know. I can't say for sure, but you can jump from one to the next and then jump to conclusions, Matt, and I don't think it's the craziest conclusion to come up with.
It was a fun day on Twitter for the quote tweets, for sure, of people saying, like, you have no idea what you just implicated yourself in.
No.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant as we inch towards the 11 o'clock hour very soon. We're going to talk about MLB, of course, and then give you an update on the potential quarterback carousel as we see it in the NFL. That's coming up.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.